Welcome to Gonkcast, an Autechr podcast. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this is yet another bonus episode about your emails. Plus, we'll spend some time discussing Autechr's 2010 mix for Fact Magazine titled Fact Mix 122. We always try to pair these bonus episodes with a roughly contemporaneous minor release that allows us to talk about other aspects of Autechr's output, from promo singles to remixes to peel sessions and live performances, all of which we plan to take a more sustained look at down the road, but which it's fun to kind of touch on for now. We haven't talked about Autechr's mixing work yet, and 2010 felt like the right time. Before we get started, I want to note that the emails on XI and Elevent are starting to trickle in now, but we haven't gotten as many as we'd like, and I know you guys have some strong opinions on these releases, so send them in, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. All right, Dan, what background info do we need to know about Fact Mix 122?
All right, well, there isn't a ton to say about Fact Mix 122, which dropped on February 8th, 2010, just 2 weeks before Oversteps. According to Fact Magazine, Autechr's only note was, "It's just some tunes we like." The mix is known for showing off a wide range of the duo's influences. Fact describes it as a potent blend of rap, slithering electro, manic breakcore, and extreme metal. The 3.39 rating on Rate Your Music may not seem like much, but it's got a lot more ratings than any other Autechr mix, which suggests that it's the go-to for quite a few fans.
Yeah, so what did you think of this mix as a whole? Any, you know, tracks, transitions, or just moments really stand out to you here?
I thought it was pretty cool. You know, I'm not like a DJ mix listening kind of guy. You know, I've talked about it. I pretty much just listen to albums. So it was like kind of neat to hear something like this. I enjoyed it. You know, it a lot of the rap I wasn't familiar with. So it was cool. Yeah. You know, like more old school stuff that I didn't know. You know, a couple things I did. I liked Venetian snares, the way that those ones got melded together, that was like really cool. I thought it was you know, a fun listen.
Yeah, the transitions are phenomenal, and it does cover like quite a wide range of sounds. I think you know, if you kind of like go through the track list, and of course if you like download this, it's just like one long track, but on Rate Your Music you can, you know, look at the individual tracks here, and you know, it kind of sticks with hip hop for a while with like these kind of breaks into sort of dreamy, like there's a really nice section where like this this kind of hip hop section sort of moves into like Tangerine Dream and like Rodelius, if I'm saying his name correctly, and then kind of back into pretty slamming hip hop and stuff. You know, it moves into, like you said, Venetian snares with like some pretty hardcore breakcore type sounds, into some like old school rap, like electro style stuff, and then kind of like ends up in this sort of, you know, Cabaret Voltaire, like post-punky area, because with a Stephen Melinder from Cabaret Voltaire. But so it's got sort of a trajectory, but I would say overall it's like pretty slamming. I mean, the hip-hop that's on here is not, you know, chilled out at all. It's like slamming beats. The whole thing has this kind of like, I know it's part of the just quality of mix, you know, mixing in general, but it's got kind of a blown out, like heavy, distorted, kind of abrasive sound throughout, you know?
Yeah, 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 definitely. It I kind of expected it to be more chilled out, you know, being from the Oversteps era, yeah, and all. And it definitely isn't. You know, it surprised me, especially the first time I decided to listen to it. I was listening to it on my speaker at work until I got to Cocksuckers and, you know, had to switch on over to the headphones.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, so I guess one question I want to ask you specifically is, you know, the metal track that's on here. I guess it's, I don't know, like metal subgenres that well, but I guess it's like technical, whatever, technical death metal, according to Rate Your Music. So it's Necrophagus Diminished to Be, which quite comically, I think, flows directly into Bernard Parmigiani, like electroacoustic kind of music concrete stuff. But what did you think about that little surprise tucked in here?
I could do without it. I really hate people fucking shredding on guitar. That's one of the worst things possible. And it's just like, it starts with just a guy, I assume it's a guy, just like hitting as many notes as fast as possible, yep, on, yep, like a, I don't know, it was awful. And then the singing, I hate that fucking It's just like so embarrassing. It's like it like literally makes me cringe. Like I feel very embarrassed for that person's parents.
Yeah, it's not my bag, but it's kind of funny. And I just feel like a lot of this mix has that quality of like there's just a fun, you know, aspect to like the transitions, like how wildly the vibe can change and how good they are at like changing the vibe kind of seamlessly. I mean, you know, I sort of mentioned before, like the way that the like Tangerine Dream and Rodelius like flows from hip hop, like back into, and again, like pretty hardcore hip hop, just seamlessly is like amazing. And I, you know, the Necrophagous stuff, yeah, not for me, but I do love how it just sort of like drops us off.
They do
in Bernard Parmigiani.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think they do like get to that and out of it. Like, well, you know, I do think it's like sort of, you know, it's a silly like song to use, but I didn't expect it to flow so well into Parmigiani there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, the question when listening to this, I guess for us and our like chronological project here is, does this mix reveal anything about Autechre's influences? And maybe more specifically, does it reveal anything about Autechre's, you know, mindset in 2010, right? This came out like as part of the kind of lead up to Oversteps, you know, might be why it was like so exciting. It was sort of like a advertisement for what was going on, even though it doesn't have a whole lot in common with Oversteps. But how do you hear it sort of linking up with Autechre and 2010 specifically?
I mean, I think it reveals about their influences in the way, like, you know, they said it's just some tunes they like. And obviously, you know, we've talked about it a bunch. There's this hip hop, you know, thread that runs through all of Autechre. So, you know, that wasn't really surprising or anything. It wasn't surprising to have like some Music Concrete on here or, you know, Tangerine Dream, Rodelius and things like that. The Necrophagous thing was a little surprising, I guess. But as far as, you know, revealing anything about 2010 and Oversteps in particular, I kind of feel like not. You know, it didn't really seem like, you know, these were maybe the songs they were listening to while they were working on their own stuff. It just kind of feels like maybe these are songs they like, you know, just in general or anything. But I always kind of feel, and we've talked about it on the show too, like Autechre doesn't really wear like their influence on their sleeve, you know,
right,
like it's hard to go beyond like saying, you know, they're obviously influenced by this like B-boy thing that they've talked about and hip hop and everything. But like, it's not like you could point to a specific, you know, song or artist frequently, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing to remember is that by this time Oversteps is done. And presumably they're like starting to work on XI. I mean, we'll talk about XI in depth next week, but it's like Oversteps becomes the Oversteps live set, which becomes XI. This is like another one of those sort of smooth development type transitions. And I kind of feel like this mix reminds me a lot more of XI. I mean, it's like quite abrasive. It's quite like noisy and it just has this kind of like heaviness that I sort of associate with XI more. And yet, you know, we talked on the Oversteps episode about the kind of blown out quality of the beats when they do arrive, you know, those like kind of light touches of like absolutely blown out sounds. And, you know, I hear a ton of that here. And there are parts where like it does get pretty dreamy, you know, like I think about, you know, the sort of Tangerine Dream section I was talking about earlier, or like the J Dilla track that's in here is like kind of shockingly dreamy J Dilla track. But, you know, it makes me think of, so it's like those moments where it's like kind of dreamy, but still has this kind of blown out, like slamming quality. And that to me sounds a little Oversteps-ish. And it's maybe a stretch, but when I think about like the metal song, it has like a heavy abrasiveness that I hear on little touches of on Oversteps, but a lot on XI as we'll talk. So I felt like I could hear maybe little bits and pieces of stuff they were listening to. You know, I couldn't help but notice that like the Raekwon song that's on here comes from Only Built for Cuban Links Part 2, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, would have come out, a year or two, or maybe just 1 year before this mix dropped. So, you know, there's some contemporary stuff that they were definitely probably listening to while they were working on this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I guess, you know, I really wasn't thinking about oversteps would have obviously been completed at this time, you know. I was sort of thinking of it, you know, contemporaneously, but yeah, you're right. I mean, maybe it is a little better to look at it as, you know, starting work on you know, what will eventually become XI. So yeah, that makes more sense.
So you know, just summing up, I mean, it would be fun to like dig into all these little tracks. I think they're like a lot, there's just so much like fun stuff in here, and the whole thing has this great energy. But just, you know, overall, is this kind of like a must hear mix for Autechre fans? You think it's just kind of like a little thing if you're curious what they were doing at this time, or how do you feel about it?
I'm, you know, I guess if you're interested enough to be listening to the podcast, you're probably, you know, interested enough to hear this mix. But just like, you know, I wouldn't recommend it to somebody who's just a, you know, a casual Autechre fan or something. I mean, yeah. it's a fun mix, but not in the like world of Autechre. Do I think it's, you know, like essential or anything? But it's definitely, I mean, I think like if you had, you know, somebody who liked older hip hop or stuff, you know, it'd be, they could, you know, really find some enjoyment in it, you know?
Yeah. 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 I guess I essentially agree. I mean, I had a great time listening to it, but it's like, you know, it didn't blow my mind, but, yeah, always fun to hear.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's kind of dig into the emails now with a question that's slightly related to that fact mix. We already discussed listener Marco's opinion that oversteps, quote, lacks the repetition found on most of Autechre's records, but he also claims that it feels the most removed from their hip hop background. So what do you think about that statement in regard to oversteps?
You know, I mean, that is kind of right, especially up to this point, I think. You know, I mean, we talked about it, the oversteps like is sort of like the most removed from, you know, beats. You know, it focuses much more on melody and harmony and all that you know, stuff, which, you know, the beat thing, it's easier to see the hip hop influence, I think. And, you know, this record is, or Oversteps is, you know, lacking that. So I do agree with him. It is sort of the most removed up to this point, you know, from that background.
Yeah, it got me. So on one hand, I have a hard time like quantifying what is like, what would that mean to be most removed from hip hop? Because like thinking about this question got me sort of realizing that the last couple albums here, haven't been super hip hop. Like weirdly, it feels to me like Untilted and Choristus are much more like kind of electronic influence. Like the acid stuff is kind of coming up, and like the you know that kind of like I guess I don't know how to sum it all up, but just like there's like a weird like DJ mixing kind of quality to Untilted, I think, and kind of these like old school electro drum beats and stuff. And Choristus has a lot of that acid and rave up stuff going on. It just feels like they spent a little period maybe not listening to as much hip hop or something, and I feel like Oversteps does kind of continue that, but it was weird to sort of come to that realization.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess I didn't really think about that either, but you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe by Oversteps, they are farther away than they had ever been from hip hop, but it does feel like they are going to kind of circle back in that direction in quite a hard way pretty soon here. What's next?
All right, yeah, more on Oversteps from listener Joe. He says, I really don't see how you could say that the tracks are any more samey than on any other of AE's albums. For me, the sound palette of Elsec drives me crazy after a while, and the tracks get very samey to me.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Is it? I mean, we complain that a lot of the tracks on Oversteps are samey, but I feel like a lot of outsiders would make that claim about a lot of Autechre albums. So how do you justify saying that this is like more samey, you know, extraordinarily samey?
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. I think, you know, people more on the outside definitely would say that. It's hard to say, you know. It's a hard question to answer. I think this, that Oversteps just really like kind of sticks to that same, you know, the each record like sort of has like this sound palette, you know. And you know, he mentions that about, you know, Elsec. But it just feels like on all the other records, like they find, you know, they make so many different things like within, you know, the confines of that palette. I just feel like the on Oversteps that those confines are you know, much more narrow.
Yeah, it's like the smallest palette so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, it's the closest I think they've come to like really falling into just making kind of the same, you know, like idea over and over, you know, for a whole record.
Yeah. That's how I feel. Cause you can't deny that it's like very focused. Like it's an extremely focused album. you know, to me, I mean, I guess I can see somebody, and we'll get to it, obviously, but like saying that about something like LSEC or even NTS. But to me, those records are more like, they're kind of like every track is like this whole new world or something that is mm-hmm. like just really exciting to hear. You know, this is like the only time I feel like where there are a couple tracks that are exploring the same exact idea. Like it's not even different sort of, you know, riffs on things or like different roads untaken from one idea or something. It's like several tracks explore the same idea to me,
yeah.
which is cool if you want like sort of a cohesive sort of thing to listen to while you're doing something else, as we kind of discussed. But for like close listening, you know, by the time you get to like the you know, we were joking, but like the third known one, you know, if there's like so many tracks that sound just like it, you just feel like, okay, we're exploring the same exact thing.
No, I mean, we, you know, I think I mentioned it when I was saying, you know, what were my favorite songs from the record, I felt like I was picking things that were like very much in the top half. And I wondered, is that just because, you know, you hear those first, I'm not bored of the record yet, you know, because you're right, you know, by the third, maybe I like known one, number one, because, you know, it's the first one. By the third time, I'm a little tired of it.
Yeah. Joe also says that he thinks it's ridiculous how reviewers of Oversteps and XI at the time would boldly claim that they were influenced by 2010's dubstep. It's just funny to me, the idea of Sean and Rob listening to Deadmau5 and going, fuck yeah, we need to do this. Both albums came out when I was in college, where I had to put up with guys blasting Skrillex in the dorm showers day in and out. So I remember taking great issue with the idea. I know the dubstep's history goes back much further than that, and that earlier dubstep sounded very different, but I still honestly don't see the dubstep nodding ambience that Pitchfork pointed out in Oversteps, or understand how Tuonorizin from XI is, quote, appropriate stuttering dubstep, as Resident Advisor claimed. What do you think about accusations of dubstep influence?
I think that's maybe these publications trying to use like the buzzwords of the day and, you know, maybe yeah. jump on that train, especially, you know, people looking up that on the internet, you know, like it brings up those articles and stuff.
That's true.
I kind of feel like it's maybe a little bit more of like, you know, we know what the kids are into these days, because he's right. I mean, I hear no, you know, Deadmau5 or Skrillex influence, you know, on Autechre, I don't think.
Yeah, I kind of disagree, because in my opinion, all right, so dubstep like sucks ass, right? We can all agree on that. And this whole like bro steppy period in the early 2010s was incredibly annoying. And all that shit is terrible. But there was something kind of cool about the sound. I even felt that back then. Like, I wish somebody interested in more than just getting bros to mosh was doing this, because like those just completely destroyed, like shredded mechanical sounds that were like coming out of Skrillex and stuff were kind of interesting to me. And I just kind of believe that they might've been interesting to Autechre as well. And what you see is, as the decade kind of goes on, right, you see people like Arca or like Andy Stott, right? Like this whole kind of deconstructed club movement. Yeah. I feel like those artists were kind of cannibalizing like the coolest, most interesting parts of dubstep and just making it much more interesting. Like they were doing what I kind of wish that people like Skrillex would do. And I think it's totally possible that Autechre like saw something cool in the sounds that were being created. And because you do hear some of that like wubby kind of like blown out stuff we were just talking about, I feel like it's possible, and it's okay if they were a little inspired by the sheer sound.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point, because you're right. I mean, you know, there are some like interesting sounds in that, you know, bro step era, just, you know, not used in an interesting kind of way.
Right.
You know, I sort of wonder if you know, did Autechre, you know, hear those sounds and thought, you know, oh, we'll use them? Or is it just like sort of a natural, you know, like that blown out kind of noise and stuff? Like, I feel like that might just be sort of a natural, you know, progression with like their use of distortion and everything. You know, it doesn't feel like they couldn't have gotten there without hearing it from elsewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's true. But I do feel like, I don't know, they always act like they don't listen to new music, but I just feel like they do, because they seem like so on the cutting edge of like, I mean, I swear to God, they're like doing deconstructed club a good like 5 years before anybody else is. And it just feels like they're kind of tuned in somewhere.
I think a lot of people kind of say things like that just because they don't want to, you know, give someone like the promotion, you know, like when you're saying,
yeah.
you know, you don't want to like, the cosine, I think the kids say.
Yeah.
These kind of days.
You don't want to shout out Deadmau5 in too many interviews.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, what's next?
All right. Listener Jordan says, you mentioned every single track on Oversteps except Q-Play, one of my favorites. It has a prominent percussive distorted bass sound playing throughout that clashes with the rest of the track, but still manages to work in harmony with it. And played on top of that are a variety of textures contrasting each other, but the calm, laid-back melody in the background keeps things grounded. It's the fuzziness that becomes the focus. It's the same reason I like Saint Eprio, but it's more calm and less overwhelming than that track. They both have a messy fuzziness to them where the concept seems to be about beautiful collisions, a beautiful mess, or a clusterfuck.
Yeah, you know, we always set out to talk about as many tracks as possible, and it is kind of sad when we just forget to talk about one. I mean, to me, Q-Play is fine. I think it's kind of cool. It does have that like cool kind of blown out thing, and it's got this like weird kind of stuttering beat going on that's like kind of neat. I mean, revisiting it after getting this email, I was just sort of realizing, one, I think that kind of blown out sound and like the kind of lopsided beat is cool, but on top of that, like all the adornment is the kind of like too generative stuff that I don't like that much about this album, where it's just kind of like plinking prettiness like over the top, and it's just kind of like aimless and nothing. And I know, like, you know, Jordan here is saying that we need to, you know, that's not the focus. The focus is the blown up thing, and I agree that it kind of works in that way. But I also sort of realized that for me personally, Q-Play is like smack in the middle of like some of my favorite songs on the album, like Known One, PT2, PH8, then Q-Play, then CNC Trial. All of them but Q-Play, I think, are like some of the best tracks on this whole record. And so maybe I just sort of forget about Q-Play, even though it's fine.
Yeah, I basically, you know, revisiting it, had the same thoughts. It's fine. You know, I can see why it was the one we forgot to talk about. You know, it's nothing. Yeah, yeah. Not to be mean to someone who likes the song a lot, but it's just, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, cool beat, but I just feel like everything but that beat is you know, just okay. All right. So listener Brian said, the one thing I'd like to say about Oversteps is that I don't think the focus on melody is reductive at all. It's actually productive. This album still has plenty of interesting rhythms in the bass and the lower synth lines, and it still has plenty of experimentation with texture, like always. Untilted and Confield were very focused on rhythm, percussion, beats, etc., but there were still melodies. The reverse is true with Oversteps. To do something so different on a 10th album is a bold move, and it expands their musical repertoire rather than limiting it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... I think it was a bold step. I didn't mean to give like that impression if I did in the, you know, previous episode, but I just think mostly it didn't work that well for me. You know, I didn't like the focus on melody and all. I kind of, you know, I enjoy the percussion and beat and rhythm like that. That's some of my favorite like things about Autechre. So focusing away from that is just sort of not a way that I'm gonna love a record, I think.
Yeah, I feel like it's a fair point, honestly, and something we didn't really talk enough about. But it's true that actually a lot of sort of like, I wouldn't call them beats, but like sort of pulses and like rhythms sort of emerge in the tracks, right? Like, so they're not like beatless. We talked about how sometimes there is like a nice forward momentum, like mm-hmm. on kind of a almost techno-y lead or something, like you know. And I feel like it's just, yeah, maybe we didn't talk about it enough, but that is what elevates it from being like just boring to being like pretty good, like a pretty good album, in my opinion, is that there is like a lot of movement going on in these tracks. They're not just like ambient washes or something. There's lots and lots of movement, but it's still like just, you know, the lightest like hint of movement, whereas, you know what I mean, it's not like just a smooth I don't know. It's not. It still feels a little reductive to me to be like, okay, so we're going to do melody with like the lightest touch of movement, so people don't get bored. You know what I mean? Instead of just like moving freely between the two, like I feel like they so often do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, what's next?
All right, listener Anton says, in the Oversteps episode, you mentioned the similarity between LP5 and Oversteps, which led me to write about this theory I have. Every 10-ish years, they seem to do that thing where they make a cohesive, melody-focused main album, which is then shortly followed by a more beat-heavy, abrasive, and experimental release. Look at LP5 and EP7, Oversteps and Move of 10, and then the recently released Sign and Plus. For me, it feels like they do this on purpose. This brings me to another thought I had the other day about how they probably plan to release Plus as an EP because it feels a bit more like an offshoot collection to me, similar to the mentioned EPs. Maybe Warp needed another big lineup album or something. Who knows?
Yeah, I kind of doubt that last part. And I feel like it works in just the same way because the album art and the album titles are like clearly related, so people are always going to like think of these as compliments to each other. I mean, it is interesting and something we'll surely talk about like why it is an album rather than an EP. But you know, I'll be damned if Anton isn't right. It feels like it's been long enough now that basically at the turn of each decade, roughly, they've kind of done like the overtly melodic thing, right? Like with LP5, you know, around the like end of the 90s, and they do Oversteps at the start of the 2010s, and now they've done Sign at the start of the 2020s. I mean, what's up with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I never thought about it till this email, but yeah, I don't know. Is it just a coincidence? Is it, you know, a way to like delineate new
reset or something?
Yeah, reset, like you know, the new period of Ottecker or whatever. I don't know. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that I think is super interesting about that is that they do, every time they do this, they immediately give you something like kind of beat heavy and experimental, as Anton notes. It kind of makes me wonder if like they're a little, I don't know if this has come out the wrong way, but like a little unsure about being so emotionally open or something. Like they can't help but like immediately follow it up with something like crushing and destroyed as quickly as possible. Like, don't get the wrong idea about us. We were like in a kind of tender spot here, but we still got it.
Yeah. That's a good one.
All right. Listener Marius on YouTube, our YouTube channel, you check that out if you haven't, says, on the question of what is the 2008 live set reconstruction, I think the answer is quite straightforward. It's a new rendering of the original piece of music in the same way any classical recording is a rendering of the original composition. If someone does a performance of an old electroacoustic music concrete piece by Stockhausen, it's a similar process, combining notes, schematics, and original tapes to recreate the original intention. In this case, however, the guys really went bonkers to be as close as humanly possible. I don't know if there's anything to discuss here, but I just realized that I think Marius is exactly right. I don't know why we didn't think of that before, that it's, you know, more like a classical interpretation, right?
Yeah, I think we were really looking at that like much too narrow-minded, especially, you know, when he brings up, you know, Stockhausen and things like that. It sort of is just a slightly more technologically advanced version of that. Yeah, he's exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, I do still think it's interesting that it does make you think about the process of recreation and like, what is this exactly, you know, it has that kind of quality, but I guess you kind of get that quality when you listen to like a electroacoustic recording, I think, reinterpretation.
Yeah, definitely. That's a real, you know, Stockhausen kind of idea. More on that topic from listener Steve says, the reconstructed 2008 live set is fantastic. After one listen, I think I like it better than Choristus. My biggest criticism of Choristus is that it doesn't feel like it flows. I know you said it does, but I don't hear it yet. And that reconstructed Echoplex set flows so well.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering if you think that like there's any chance that the 2008 live set is a better entry point for people who can't get into Choristus.
You know, that's a good thought, actually, because I think the listener's right. I think the set does, you know, purposely flow more than Choristus does, you know, in the sense that it, you know, was a live set, and it really does. You know, I didn't listen to the live set until after we had finished the Choristus episode, but I think that definitely you know, it is a good idea. You know, if I think if you're struggling understanding Choristus or getting into it, I think that would definitely help.
Yeah, because it's like what we were talking about was you listen to some track on Choristus and you got to kind of do the brain work to like think like, oh yeah, that sound is kind of, like I kind of heard that 20 minutes ago, I think, you know, like a little piece of this other track, or like, you know, notice that it pops up again later. And you can start to see how everything kind of like ties together and then start to like draw threads through it. But the live set, it just shows you those threads like right away, because everything does flow smoothly into each other. So it might actually work as sort of a key that, you know, helps you piece it all together if it feels like just a big mess to you. Okay, here's a few stray thoughts from listener Thomas, who says, Move of 10 to me sounds like the gooey little brother of Choristus. Some serious early gonks are on this record. I mostly just wanted to read that part because I love that description.
I know.
Gooey little brother. Thomas also writes, been listening to a lot of Draft recently, and I think it's their most visually imaginative album. To me, this record begs for a closed-eye, headphoned experience. The dense claustrophobia almost feels like it was dangerous to make, haha. A very overwhelming album. Do you have any thoughts on what you would call Autechre's, like, most visual album, whatever that might mean?
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess Draft is maybe a good... you know, one for that, even though it's not my favorite record. I do sort of like, in thinking of Draft, I do kind of like think of it as that kind of CGI, like, you know, sort of, you know, yeah. The way the cover is. And maybe I think of it because of that cover art, but I think that cover art is like very descriptive of the record. So I think I could maybe choose that one. But I really didn't think about it much before this. So I'm not sure. What about you?
I mean, for me, I feel like it's a cop out, but you know, the Gantz graph video is just like so iconic. But we talked about on that episode how it feels like the Gantz graph video kind of like teaches you how to listen to not just Gantz graph, but Confield as well. But I want to say that even if that video didn't exist, I would still feel like Confield is the most visual album for me. Like if I shut my eyes and listen to it, it just feels like these weird, totally abstract shapes, like shifting around in really strange ways. I kind of like tried to, it's hard to put into words, but mm-hmm. I listened to Confield and I tried to talk about this on the episode. It's like, I feel like the compositions are like so, I don't know, it's just so synthesized into like one whole, you know, it doesn't sound like a bunch of layers of like different sounds or anything. It just sounds like this one clear shape. I don't know what it is, but I guess the short answer is for me, Confield. It's like I can see Confield.
Yeah, no, I get you. It is. It's a difficult thing to, you know, because you're not actually see. You know, it's really sort of a, I don't know, philosophical question or something.
Yeah, I'd be curious what listeners think. Write us a goncastpod@gmail.com if you think there's a most visual album. Thomas also writes, you guys have an emailer named Sean, and I love to think that it's really Sean Booth writing in to correct some things and give his opinion on his own works. Maybe I'm right. Who knows? We see you, Sean. You know, to me, it would be, I was thinking about this. I was like, okay, it'd be really weird if Sean Booth disguised only his last name to write into us.
It's smart,
but
though.
But yeah, it would actually be good because then I would never catch on. But on that note, listener Sean actually did write in to say, thanks again to you and Dan for doing this. It's funny, but having this structured deep dive to get into was one of the highlights of my year and much needed in this mentally challenging time. We usually cut out the like all the nice things you guys say because it feels like conceited or something to read them on air, but I was kind of curious, Dan, how you think it's been like spending so much time with Autechre in this crazy year. Do you think you'll always associate Autechre with like COVID and lockdown after this?
Oh, you know, I didn't think about that. That's a good point. I think it's been kind of nice to have like something to focus on, you know, in the process of like doing this show, you know, like, you know, just to have, you know, I got to listen to this record and for, you know, over and over and stuff. And I mean, it's music I enjoy. So, you know, that's helpful because I have like outside of this podcast, just, you know, the regular music I listen to, I have like sort of been kind of in like a slump, like of finding new things to, you know, like all throughout lockdown, I found myself just listening to a lot of like, you know, things I already like, I guess, maybe, you know, it's comforting or whatever, but so it has been kind of nice to like, even though I already know these Autechre records, to really deep dive into them, especially like the ones that I hadn't before. But as far as associating it with COVID, you know, I didn't really think about that. I probably will, because you know, in after we finish this podcast and all, I'm sure like as I go back and listen to it, you know, I'll think of what I thought, you know, during those episodes and stuff. And, you know, I'll remember wearing a mask during it.
Yeah. I was kind of like shocked to realize, because when I think about this podcast, I just feel like we've been doing it the whole lockdown. And And then I realized that we actually started like in November or something. We were like very deep, far into it.
Yeah, I was trying to remember when we actually, it was towards the end of the year. So yeah, it's we were pretty far in already.
Yeah, but it's like a sign to me that I already think of like the year of COVID as the year of Autechre. So I probably will forever after this. All right, what's next?
All right, let's return to listener Joe, who asked for our thoughts on the recent album Survivor poll conducted on our Autechre. The winner was Confield, and the order of elimination was Incunabula, Choristus Plus, Amber Oversteps Draft, Sign, Trirepite, Untilted, Chiastic, LP5, NTS, Elsec, and then XI.
Yeah, XI lost by 0.1% to Confield, which is simply incredible. But any surprises here on this Survivor round?
It honestly surprises me that Confield is number one, even though it was so close, you know? I feel like the election was stolen from XI, we should maybe look into that. But it honestly surprised me that Trirepite is so low. It was taken out so early. And Sign being, you know, signed just before Trirepite, you know, that's such a new record. And then Plus being, you know, if Sign, you know, I could see like, oh, the newness, you know, people are still in it. But Plus was one of the first, taken away. So it really, the order is kind of not what I would have guessed. Even Incunabula being the first one eliminated is a little strange. I probably would have guessed Choristus. Honestly.
I mean, I guess what I realized is that this poll is for people who are on a subreddit about Autechre.
True.
And that means that they're like their next level Autechre fans. So it's like, you know, and I include myself in this. I voted in quite a few rounds, to be honest. But how do I put this? This is a poll for people who have already worn like Trirepite into the ground.
That's true.
You know?
That's a good point.
And like looking at it, I do feel like Confield is Trirepite for people who are a little sick of Trirepite. Like it's like the classic kind of like text of the later period Autechre. And it's interesting that you can see how, the 2010s stuff like XI and LSEC and NTS are all extremely high here. And that does seem to be like, the hardcore fans are maybe even still digging through these monster projects and loving every minute of it. I was also kind of delightfully surprised to see how high Chiastic Slide was. I mean, I feel like that's one that gets forgotten a lot. But then again, if you're a hardcore Autechre fan, you probably don't forget that one a lot.
True. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about it in that way of like the people that, you know, it's not just a music fan opinion. It's a Autechre fan opinion.
Yeah, so Joe also shared his breakdown of Autechre eras. For him, it's 1, pre-warp, which is like Lego Fee, Cavity Job, Warp Tapes. 2, early/classic era, which is Incunabula through Chiastic Slide. 3, the digital era with Sickly Sweet through Draft. 4, the Electron era, Untilted through Quad Range. 5, Max era, Oversteps through NTS. And 6, the new era, which is Sign Plus through whatever is to come. Maybe this is something we need to return to when we're kind of looking back on the whole discography. I feel like we'll have to do an episode or something where we like revisit things and sort of make our definitive lists and reflect on the whole journey and everything. But do you have any just initial thoughts on Joe's breakdown here?
Yeah, I definitely think we should do an episode, you know, once we get through everything, because it's been a recurring theme, you know. I think like my illusion of, these Autechre periods has been like completely shattered, you know. Deep diving into this and everything.
It's not as clear cut as I once thought it was.
No, exactly. Yeah, I thought it was very clear cut before, and I'm liking the listeners' breakdowns much better. I think I was always trying to do it in like three kind of periods, you know, early, middle, current. But I think what he did, spreading it out, you know, to six periods, really fits a lot better.
Yeah, I sort of like the idea of like breaking up the what I would have called the middle period with this kind of like how did he put it, the digital and then the electron era. That makes sense, but I'm still tempted to say there's sort of like this classic period that sort of ends with, you know, LP5 or something, and then this kind of like middle period that starts with Confield and is only a cohesive period in the sense that it's not cohesive at all. It's like every album is a completely different idea. And then in the tens, we do settle into something that we might call the max era or like the data dump era. But yeah, something I just kind of wanted to like read that, so maybe we get the juices flowing as we think about that, and then we can definitely revisit it. On a similar note, though, listener Alex asks, are you planning to do all of LSEC and all of NTS in one episode each? That seems crazy, but if not, how are you planning to break them up? Probably something we should talk about off air, but do you have any initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, one, I think he's given us much more planning credit than we actually should take. We don't look that far ahead. I don't know. I think it would be nice to do the deep dive and split it up, but also, you know, do we want to spend 6 weeks, you know, on or 5 weeks on LSEC and 4 weeks on NTS? You know, I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I mean, we could split it in half, but we had the same sort of problem when we were thinking about how to do Quoristis, like that whole era. We thought, well, maybe we should break it up, but then I feel like it worked really well, actually, to like talk about it as one giant thing, and I do feel like you lose something from like NTS or LSEC if you think about the big picture.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because honestly, when we were preparing to do Quoristis and all, I think we kind of were leaning to breaking it up, and then just in the process of the week listening to it, we realized that we really did need to just kind of do it all at once. Basically, we don't, you know, it's very fluid around here. we'll change to fit our own ideas and thoughts.
We'll figure it out. Worst case scenario, you'll get like a 3-hour episode on just all of LSEC coming up pretty soon.
yeah, exactly. All right, well, that's enough for the bonus episode here. If you've got any odd tech or opinions, hot takes you want to share, we want to hear them. Send them to us, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next episode in about a week, XI and L event. Again, send us your thoughts on those, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Look us up on YouTube. Stay connected, Twitter, Instagram. Those are @gonkcastpod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.